being given by, it's intracavitary therapeutics for pleural malignancies, given by Dr. Olga Levski, who's our chemotherapy oncologist, oncologist for mesothelioma program at UCLA. She trained in University of Minnesota and then came down here to do oncology. She's been working with us for a number of years now. I can't even remember how many years, so it's embarrassing. But she has been key in getting our clinical trial program going, because I can tell you back in the 1990s and early 2000s, before cisplatin and pemetrexed was approved, trying to get an oncologist interested in seeing a mesothelioma patient was almost impossible. I was mostly told just go send them to the phase one person. So it's been a really pleasure to having Olga on our team, because she actually is very interested and learns about it. So Olga's going to talk to us about intracavitary therapeutics. Olga. You want to come up here, because we're going to try and have a little panel anyway. You can see the monitor, so you don't see it.
Do we have a, how do we change them?
Here. This is four right there.
And the pointer.
You can see it there.
Perfect.
Unless you have the point, you need to turn it on.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. I have been with the program for a number of years, and we have grown, and it's wonderful to be here. We're doing a lot of good things. So what I will speak to you about are the intracavitary therapies in mesothelioma. And what we will be discussing this morning, there is really not a lot of randomized data. There are no phase three trials. So this is kind of our state of the art, but really based on some anecdotal experiences. So of course, this is kind of the mandatory introductory slide. Mesothelioma occurs in approximately 2,000 to 3,000 individuals yearly, and it is an extremely difficult disease to treat, with median survival still being rather dismal, even though it has gone up in the more recent time. Earlier stage or resectable disease is treated with multimodality therapy. And of course, we're always looking for additional therapies to improve the survival rate. So let me remind you briefly for what we have data, and we should keep these numbers in mind. As Dr. Cameron just mentioned, prior to 2003, there was no standardized chemotherapy, and the first clinical trial, which was an ASCO plenary session, was a phase three trial of cisplatinum and pemetrexed versus cisplatin. Overall survival without surgery for non-surgical patients with combination chemotherapy was 12 months versus 9.3 months with cisplatin alone. We haven't had any other trials for almost 13 years, and last year we came up with a MAPS trial, which was the addition of bevacizumab, followed by bevacizumab maintenance. And here, I'm going to point your attention to the survival. The survival in the combination arm with addition of bevacizumab to chemotherapy was 18.8 months versus 16.1 months in cisplatin and pemetrexed without the bevacizumab. So it was a little bit better than in the original trial. So what are the challenges? We're obviously trying to improve on this data. As we know, that the most common site in mesothelioma recurrence, especially in the epithelioid mesothelioma, is the ipsilateral thorax. From historical data, we know that the multimodality approach works better than single-agent approach, and all the long-term survivors or any long-term survivors have had surgery. And as we all know, the R0 resection is not possible in mesothelioma since the tumor abuts and encases surfaces of the thorax. So we're trying to improve on that. It's logical to use intracavitary treatments at the time of surgery. And again, the goal is to eradicate the microscopic disease in attempts to sterilize the thorax, enhance the local effects. And of course, if we're doing local therapy, then hopefully the systemic effects of therapeutic agents won't be as difficult to tolerate. So multiple approaches have been used, and we will try to get to all of them, and we'll see if the time permits that. The first one is heated intraoperative chemotherapy. We'll briefly go through the data. There is betadine or heated intraoperative PVP. There is the photodynamic therapy. There is fibrin-associated cisplatin that is currently in clinical trials. There is intrapleural immunotherapy, and there is intrapleural gene therapy. So these are the original trials. I don't know how well this projects. These are some of the older trials that are with non-heated immunotherapy. This data is compiled from 1994 to 1996. And some of the trials, as you can see, the numbers are very, very small. Some of the trials allowed additional systemic therapy. The main toxic effect was renal failure. And progression-free survival and overall survival ranged between 7 to 11 to 18 months. And results are conflicting because some of these trials showed survival benefits and some did not. And some of the trials actually had some pretty significant side effects. So the next step after this was the heated intraoperative chemotherapy. Most of this work has been done in Boston. And two goals, theoretical goals that are accomplished is the delivery of higher dose of the drug to the patient than is possible to deliver systemically. And there is improved drug absorption since hyperthermia theoretically is believed to cause an increase in membrane permeability. Hypothermia can cause protein denaturation, and it can create apoptosis. So these are the heated chemotherapy trials. There was a pilot trial by Rado of 10 patients that were treated with extrapleural pneumonectomy and pleurectomy decorticatation. And they were able to see that, they were able to show that the hyperthermic patients had greater uptake from the pleural space than the patients that did not have a heated therapy, though that was the trial that actually had the two arms. And other groups were able to show and confirm the feasibility of hyperthermic chemotherapy. But as you see, the temperature was 42 degrees, and at least in vitro, the actual cell kill occurs at higher temperatures. This was kind of one of the bigger series. This was a retrospective trials and one of the later trials. This was a group of low-risk patients that were treated between 2001 and 2009. And they were identified, again, this was a retrospective trial. They were identified by a questionnaire. They all had epithelioid histology and had very low volume disease, less than 500 cc's. 103 patients were identified, 72 of them received hyperthermic therapy, 31 did not. And patients in the hyperthermic group had a longer time to recurrence and had an overall survival of 35 months versus 22.8 months. And the difference was most evident in patients that did not receive radiotherapy or patients that had N1 and N2 disease. Again, retrospective trial and selected patients. So therefore, if we take that retrospective series into account, this is what we can conclude about intraoperative heated chemotherapy. There are no phase 3 trials. The MTD of cisplatin was found to be between 225 to 250 milligrams per meter squared. There was fairly high perioperative mortality, but there was a big range from 0 to 11%. Dose-limiting toxicities were renal insufficiency and atrial fibrillation, and those were the common ones, of course, respiratory failure and DVTs from cisplatin were also seen. There was a big range in medial overall survival between 9 and 35 months. And again, the 35 months comes from that retrospective series. Progression-free survival is between 4.5 to 27 months. So the next step was to, we will discuss right now, is the intrapleural gene therapy. And again, the gene therapy, as we just heard earlier, is a novel strategy that harnesses the patient's immune system in fighting the cancer. So the first studies were planned in injecting viral thymidine kinase intrapleurally, and then following the transduction of the virus into the genome, administering antiviral agent ganciclovir to selectively kill the tumor cell. So again, this viral thymidine kinase is a suicide gene. And ganciclovir, which is an antiviral drug, is metabolized by thymidine kinase into a cytotoxin, and ganciclovir triphosphate, which directly targets the cell that expressed the transgene. And what was noted later as a secondary effect, the adenoviral vector would induce a host inflammatory response to cancer cells containing the transgene. And this secondary effect actually was felt to be the more important effect. So there was a phase one trial. As you can see, the trials were done 10 years ago. They were done earlier. Intrapleural adenovirus vectors containing the herpes virus thymidine kinase suicide gene were given to 21 mesothelioma patients that were followed by 2 weeks of ganciclovir. And 11 patients out of 22 were able to show transfer of the HSV TK gene into the superficial layer of the tumor. And 2 patients were reported to have long-term survival over 6.5 years. And again, analysis of the trial suggested that the anti-cancer effect was likely due to the host inflammatory effect, rather than the direct effect of the virus. So another phase one trial was done, adenoviral vector containing an immune stimulant, interferon beta, was given to 10 patients. 7 of these were mesothelioma patients, and it was injected into the intrapleural space. 7 patients had successful gene transfer, and 3 out of 7 mesothelioma patients showed disease stability at 60 days. There is also a trial that was done with intrapleural gamma interferon. And again, they took patients with early stage mesothelioma, gamma interferon solution at a dose of 40 million units was given intrapleurally twice a week for 2 months. And patients were subsequently evaluated by thoracoscopic examinations and biopsies. 4 out of 19 had a complete response, and 1 patient had a partial response. So the next immunotherapy agent was a recombinant IL-2. It has activity in highly immunogenic cancers, such as melanoma, renal cell cancer. However, there is some activity in colon and lung cancer. There are some in vitro studies that indicate that the natural killer cell, CD3 positive and CD8 positive cells, can lyse the mesothelioma cell lines. And these cells can be suppressed by asbestos fibers and restored by IL-2. Optimal results are obtained from routes and schedule designed to prolong the exposure to the drug. And since the half-life of IL-2, of recombinant IL-2, is very short, it's less than an hour, a continuous infusion was found to produce the best results and also avoid the systemic side effects, such as fluid retention and cardiovascular morbidity that is often seen with IL-2. A phase 2 study of 23 patients was done. IL-2 was administered at escalating doses ranging from 3 to 36 million units intrapleurally. 4 out of 21 patients had a partial response. Median time to progression was 5 months, and median overall survival was 15.6 months. Another phase 2 study was done by ASTUL. This is the major phase two study that was done with intrapleural recombinant IL-2. These authors have done a phase one and then moved on to this phase two study. They used a high dose, doses higher than were used in other trials, 21 million units per day for 5 days. And they had patients with stages 1 through 4. And they had a 1 complete response, 1 partial response, 3 patients with stable disease. And again, with intrapleural recombinant IL-2 alone, median survival, overall survival was 18 months. And in responders, which were all patients with epithelioid tumors, the median overall survival was 28 months. In the non-responders, the median overall survival was much smaller at 8 months. So this is a more recent paper that was published in 2016 that hypothesizes the role of the IL-2. And it talks about the cancer-specific T cells that are exhausted or dysfunctional T cells. And these exhausted T cells secrete reduced amounts of cytokines such as IL-2, gemzyme B, and interferon gamma. These cells show decreased cell viability and enhanced apoptosis. There is also an elevated expression of PD-1 in these cells, and blocking PD-1 breaks T cell tolerance and enhances anti-tumor activity. And what these authors were able to show is that IL-2 reversed the exhaustion of the CD8 positive cells, and the fraction of the PD-1 expressing cells were reduced significantly after the IL-2 treatment, and production of interferon gamma by CD8 cells was increased in malignant pleural effusions after IL-2 administration. The next modality that we will discuss is the photodynamic therapy. Most of the photodynamic therapy trials were done at Penn, and Joe Friedberg shared his slides with me, so most of the photodynamic therapy information comes from him, and the slides are his. So the three key components in the photodynamic therapy or the light-based cancer treatment, you have to have a photosensitizer, you have to have a light source, and you have to have tissue oxygen. And during the PDT, the day before the surgery, the patient receives non-toxic photosensitizing agent that is activated with a visible laser light, which results in tumor destruction. So there are three etiologies of how this treatment works. The first one is the direct cell kill from the light. There is an eradication of tumor neovasculature, but what seems to be most exciting is that there is a provocation of tumor-directed immune response, which is thought to be the most important mechanism. What makes PDT very attractive is it penetrates the tissue just for several millimeters beneath the surface, and well-suited adjunct for an operation that predictably leaves microscopic tumor behind. Photodynamic therapy, prior to surgery, the patient receives photosensitizer as an outpatient, and the patient becomes light sensitive. Photosensitive patients require light precautions during surgery, and as you can see here, yellow filters are used to limit unmeasured light administration. So the way that they do the surgery is they do the macroscopic complete resection, and once that is done, intraoperative PDT takes about an hour after the surgery. So they sew in isotropic light detectors into the chest cavity. Laser supplies the light at the appropriate wavelength, and the laser fiber is placed into the modified endotracheal tube where a balloon is filled with an intralipid solution. And then the surgeon pours the dilute intralipid into the chest cavity to help reflect the light into all the recesses. And PDT is done by moving the light source around the chest until every one of the light detectors detects the predetermined light dose. These are the data. That was the original set of patients that were done at Penn on a clinical trial from 2005 to 2008. They looked at 38 patients. 97% of them had stage 3 and 4 disease. 24 of them had N2 disease. And they achieved the macroscopic complete resection in 97% of the patients. And they've done pleurectomy and decortication followed by PDT. And overall survival in this set of patients was 31.7 months at a median follow-up of 34 months. Progression-free survival was 9.6 months. And for epithelioid patients, the difference was particularly striking at 41.2 months versus 15 months for the non-epithelioid patients. So they went on to do more patients, and they extended the trial. And this is the analysis of the patients from 2005 to 2013. They had two separate clinical trials. Those were the prospective trials. There were phase 2, 73 patients. They had two different photosensitizers. Again, they limited the surgery to pleurectomy decortications. Nobody had extrapleural pneumonectomy, and this was followed by PDT. 92% of the patients received neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapy. They had 68% of the patients that were N2, and 89% of the patient had stage 3 to 4 disease. All surgeries were done by one surgeon. And this is the survival. Overall survival was 36 months, and you can see this in the graphic form. So recurrence-free survival was 14 months. And this was very impressive, and this is a particularly striking curve that median overall survival in N0 patients was, and this is, these are years, so the median survival was 87 months. And even the N1 and N2 patients had a median survival of 23 months, so better than what we have seen before. So current hypothesis for these good results is that it's not clear whether it's the light or the surgery. Having two lungs permits more adjuvant treatments at the time of recurrence. Performance status is usually better. This is a less morbid operation. And there is also this interesting thought that the remaining PDT-treated cells induce an autologous tumor vaccine effect or uncovering of the tumor antigens that induce an immune response. This is intracavitary cisplatin. There is a phase 3 clinical trial that is currently recruiting. This is data from Zurich, from Dr. Wetter. There is the first study that was done was a preclinical study, and this was an animal model, and the goal was to measure the concentration of cisplatin in tissue versus blood, where cisplatin was administered as a solution loaded to a fibrin carrier. And the animals were divided into two groups, and they all have undergone an extrapleural pneumonectomy. And one set of the experimental group received 5 milligrams of cisplatin combined with a fibrin sealant, and the other group received intravenous or systemic cisplatin at 90 milligrams per meter squared. And they had very interesting results. They were able to show that the dose and concentration of cisplatin in the chest wall 2 hours and 5 days after the application was doubled in animals treated with cisplatin fibrin compared to the animals treated with the cisplatin intravenous solution. And what's very important is that the serum creatinine levels of cisplatin fibrin-treated animals will lower than the levels of cisplatin solution-treated animals. And cisplatin fibrin-treated animals had better post-op course as assessed by well-being scores. And this is very interesting. It offers an advantage over systemic therapy where local concentrations are maintained and side effects are reduced. So this is going into a phase 3 trial. The PI is Dr. Opitz in Zurich, and intracavitary cisplatin and fibrin. They are doing the pleurectomy decortications, and the MTD was found to be 44 milligrams per meter squared, so much higher than the 5 milligrams that were used initially. And after neoadjuvant chemo and PD, cisplatin fibrin sealant is to be administered. So what they do is they take the sealant and then they just attach and they just deliver it to the chest cavity after the surgery. And just in a few minutes, we're going to talk about the heated betadine solution. This is just simple betadine. It's used as an antiseptic during intrathoracic and intra-abdominal lavage. And what's interesting, it doesn't only have the antiseptic properties, it also has anti-tumor properties. And 10-minute incubation of epithelial and biphasic mesothelioma cells with betadine at 0.1% resulted in 99% cell death. And PVP concentration of 1% for 10 minutes resulted in 99% cell death in sarcomatoid cells. So we would not necessarily expect this from betadine. And it demonstrated significant tumor reduction by weight and ascites when compared to cisplatinum and 5-FU. And this is the betadine. And you can see this is the normal saline, so significant decrease. Most of this data comes from one center, one surgeon. And again, this was a big series, 102 patients from 2004 to 2013. Patients were treated with PD and hyperthermic pleural lavage with PVP, followed by radiotherapy. They used the 10% solution for lavage. And out of that group, 36 patients were treated with heated betadine following surgery, and this was followed by radiation therapy. They had a big group of patients, mostly epithelioid, some biphasic, and 3.9% sarcomatoid. And you can see the stages that are shown here. They had an excellent morbidity and mortality. They had zero postoperative death and minor post-op complications, very different from the heated chemotherapy. And overall median survival just from adding betadine to the surgery was 24 months. they again followed this up with more patients, again, same center in England, same surgeon. And this time they had the neoadjuvant chemo, EPP, adjuvant radiotherapy. And in this group, they matched the patient for sex age and histology. And overall survival, again, was confirmed to be 23 months in patients that used the betadine as well as the prophylactic radiation group. So in this study, they were able to show that PD, PVP, and radiotherapy had lower perioperative mortality and lower morbidity than the traditional multimodality group. So in conclusion, we all know that mesothelioma is difficult to treat. Novel therapies and strategies are needed. And many intrapleural therapies are being looked at, but phase 3 trials are needed prior to incorporating these therapies into the standard of care. Thank you.